Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, March 27, 2023, live to be broadcast on Wednesday, March 29th, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Happy spring! It's been spring for a week now. Have you done anything special? Have you gone for a hike? Have you sat or walked in your yard, sprouted some seeds, played in your garden, spent some time outdoors? I've been trying to get outside. I've been on my bike outdoors a couple of times, mostly on the trainer because it's been, on the days that I can ride, it's been cold and rainy and stuff. But I did get out on the bike yesterday for a hilly ride, and now my back's a little sore because of it. And I'm not going to go out on the bike today, obviously, because it's kind of a Monday thing. It's a workday thing. Anyway, I encourage you to get outside. It's going to be pretty nice today in this part of Connecticut. We're going to get some sun, although we're going to get some rain at the end of the day, and then it'll be kind of overcast tomorrow. I thought I'd talk about some metabolism stuff before I got into the cardiovascular stuff. So here's something interesting. The caffeine from coffee and tea can help reduce body fat and diabetes risk. So that's interesting. That coffee can actually, there are things about coffee that are actually good for you. There's research that suggests coffee, green and black tea, and I should also put out there oolong tea, they can help reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes. The caffeine in those drinks and the effect it can have on body fat and weight may be the reason for the reduced risk. They can boost metabolism. They have other health benefits. They increase alertness and concentration. They enhance your exercise performance and your mood. But of course, when you consume too much, depending on how well you metabolize it, what your speed of metabolizing it, it can cause things like anxiety, insomnia, and jitteriness. They have a lot of antioxidants. Coffee and green and black tea have a lot of antioxidants. These are natural compounds that are linked to a lot of health benefits. And the caffeine have its own benefits. They also, that caffeine, it's actually caffeine that can help to reduce type 2 diabetes. There's a genetic study that suggests this. It's probably because of the effect on fat and body weight. The findings suggest that caffeine might, at least in part, explain the inverse association between coffee consumption and the risk of type 2 diabetes. So the research fits with other research suggesting a link between caffeine and type 2 diabetes risk. There are other studies that show that moderate coffee consumption, so moderate, this is a lot of coffee. I guess some people can drink this amount of coffee. I certainly can't, because I just can't break it down this much, because the amount that they're saying that's helpful is 3 to 5 cups a day.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
That might be more than me.
Right, it's a huge amount. And, you know, not everybody can handle that amount of caffeine. And what I don't know is what the breakdown statistically is of people as far as the rapidity of their breaking down caffeine. Like, how many people are slow, fast, and medium metabolizers of caffeine? I'm not sure. So the authors of the study used a genetic method to look at the impact of blood levels of caffeine on body fat and risk of type 2 diabetes and also cardiovascular disease. They looked at coronary artery disease, stroke, heart failure, and also specifically in an arrhythmia, which is atrial fibrillation. So when they randomized, they focused on two common genetic variants. So they looked at the genetic variants for two genes associated with how quickly the body metabolizes ingested caffeine. So people who have the variant with slower metabolism of caffeine drink less coffee on average, but they have higher levels of caffeine in their blood when they drink coffee. So, you know, if I drink an espresso and Ron drinks an espresso, my caffeine blood level is going to be much higher than Ron's because he metabolizes it out a lot faster. So they researched genetic and other data from people of a lot of people from mostly European ancestry who were looking at the taking part in the six long-term studies and found that people genetically predisposed to have higher levels of caffeine, that's people like me, were more likely to have a lower body mass and body fat when they consume the caffeine. And they also had a lower risk of type 2 diabetes. That about half the diabetes risk was because of the lower BMI. There was no link seen between genetically predicted caffeine levels in the blood and risk of cardiovascular disease outcomes. So one limitation of the study that the people were mostly of European ancestry, so it might not apply to other groups, but it also might. So they only looked at two genetic variants associated with caffeine metabolism, and there are other variants that might shape a person's type 2 diabetes risk in relation to their caffeine intake. So the researchers don't want to prescribe caffeine. So if you don't drink a lot of caffeine, this doesn't necessarily mean you should start, because people kind of select for themselves as to how much caffeine that they're going to consume. A person like me, I'm not going to drink a lot of caffeine, because if I drink too much over time, I definitely have, I don't feel well. You know, if I drink too much in a day, I might get jittery and I might have trouble sleeping and I might get shaky. And then I wake up in the morning with that caffeine hangover. Not everybody gets that caffeine hangover, but you wake up in the morning and you feel groggy and sluggish. And that has to do with the play of adenosine. Caffeine has a similar structure to the compound adenosine, and that binds to your brain. And adenosine binds to cells in your brain, which makes you feel sleepy. And you get more adenosine binding at night, which tells your body, okay, it's time to calm down and it's time to get ready for sleep. Caffeine will bond to those sites and block the adenosine from binding and then do its other stuff, which is be a phosphodiesterase inhibitor, which means it's going to prevent your catecholamines from breaking down. So it's going to prevent your dopamine and norepinephrine, which are energizing neurotransmitters. It prevents them from breaking down so that you feel that sense of extra alertness. You don't feel as tired. And if you're exercising, it increases your RPE, your ratings of perceived exertion. Your perceived exertion will be lower when you have caffeine on board at the same output. So you feel better pushing the same wattage or doing the same level of activity that you would without the caffeine on board. So caffeine definitely will do all those things for you. People self-limit as to how much caffeine they can consume. Burn through your caffeine pretty fast, you're probably going to drink more caffeine than someone like me who a little goes a long way. I mean, a quarter cup or less of coffee will send me, it will make me wired for hours. It's pretty amazing. I don't have a real, I'm definitely a slow metabolizer. So they want to do randomized control trials to assess whether non-caloric caffeine-containing beverage could play a role in reducing the risk of obesity and type 2 diabetes. So you have to remember, if you want to get these effects, if you're going to put a bunch of sugar and fatty creamer into the coffee, it's going to negate those effects, because sugar and cream, sugar and cream together, now you have the fat and sugar binding, or fat and sugar cohort, which is going to increase your neuropeptide Y. And when you increase your neuropeptide Y, it turns on your fat storage and it causes you, it stops your satiety so that you don't feel satiated when you eat. And so you keep eating and eating and eating. It doesn't turn on your satiety signals. So that right now the researchers are not saying, don't start drinking caffeine to reduce your diabetes risk. That you still should focus on, you don't get to just drink caffeine and lose weight. You still have to eat a really healthy diet, reduce your stress, and get physical activity. It's just that caffeine may enhance your efforts in that way. And again, if you are going to consume caffeine, if you do it with sugary and fatty stuff in it, it's not going to work as well. So, caffeine has other potential health benefits. As we said, increasing alertness and concentration and enhancing your exercise and performance. It improves your mood, although if you're like me, once it's offline, you get more irritable. So it kind of produces swings. It can be, if you're not a real good metabolizer, it can be fraught to consume it. But they talk about people consuming up to 400 milligrams of caffeine a day. But again, there's a wide variation of how sensitive people are to caffeine. And 400 milligrams is about 4 or 5 cups of brewed coffee. Green and black tea tend to have lower amounts, although it depends on the green or black tea. If you're doing a strong breakfast blend of tea, it might have almost as much. So limiting your amount can be really helpful. So, again, as I was saying, you don't want to consume forms of caffeine that are high in added sugar and added fat because of what I said. The big thing is the neuropeptide Y. It increases neuropeptide Y in your brain that turns off your satiety signals so that you just feel like eating and eating and eating, and also turns on your fat storage. So it's not a good idea to have, you know, major sugar sweeten those big fun drinks that you get at certain coffee houses and coffee places. And you also want to, of course, be aware of what time you're consuming the caffeine. The later in the day that you consume it, the more it is to affect your sleep. That makes sense, right? So be careful with your caffeine, but we wanted to let you know that caffeine can indeed, if you can tolerate it, it can be helpful for fat loss. All right. So thinking about speeding up your metabolism and helping with fat loss, I thought I'd talk to you about some foods that can help to speed up your metabolism. Now, again, the way to lose fat, if you want to lose fat, first of all, is not to focus on the fat loss, because fat loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. You can do everything that you think is right in a given week and not lose weight, right? So that is a thing that happens. And so if you focus on the numbers on the scale, you just make yourself crazy. So the best thing to do is to live a healthy lifestyle. Get adequate rest, get adequate sleep, do restorative activities like guided meditation, yin yoga, restorative yoga, tai chi, do stuff like that, and get regular exercise, whatever exercise you will do, in a moderate way. Sometimes you do it hard and sometimes you do it easy and sometimes you rest. And then, because the way that you lose fat is reduced caloric intake in a state of hormonal balance. And to get the hormonal balance, you have to get your rest. That's the most important thing. So if you're trying to lose weight, you might want to find some foods that help to increase your metabolic rate. So there are certain foods that can be helpful with that. And again, if you're going to try to lose fat, you have to do what I said. You have to reduce your caloric intake in a state of hormonal balance. So first of all, foods that are rich in protein. So, and that can be, it can be animal or vegetable protein. So legumes, nuts, seeds, dairy if you're not intolerant to it, eggs, fish, and other animal protein can help to increase your metabolism actually for a few hours, because your body works harder to burn these things. They require your body to use more energy to digest them. So they have a higher TEF, that's the thermic effect of food. And so that means that your body uses calories in order to burn these things. So protein-rich foods increase your thermal effect the most. So they can increase your metabolic rate by 15 to 30%, carbs are the easiest thing to go up. That's not true. They're the medium thing to go up, and fat, it takes the least energy to metabolize fat, and the most energy, although fat doesn't raise your insulin as much as carbohydrates and protein do. But it's your body takes up fat the most readily, and followed by carbs, followed by protein. It takes 15 to 30% of the calories. It increases your metabolic rate by 15 to 30% consuming protein. When you eat protein-rich diets, it reduces that drop in metabolism that you'll get when you drop your calories and by holding onto its muscle mass. And this is even more important for women when we're trying to lose weight, because when women reduce their caloric intake, they reduce their leptin, and their leptin goes down more than when men try to lose weight. So leptin is a hormone that helps you feel your satiety. And so if you consume more protein, you will help to mitigate that effect. But protein will help for men and women. And protein, when you eat protein, it helps you feel full longer because it does take more energy. But protein will sit in your stomach longer than high carbohydrate foods. So you'll feel satisfied for longer, and you'll get that increased metabolic effect. And the other thing is that protein, when you eat protein, your body's not that excited about using protein for energy. It would rather use protein for food. So it takes the amino acids and turns them into body parts and enzymes in your body, as opposed to using it for energy. Your body would rather use carbohydrates and fat for energy. So when you eat more protein, you're feeling more full, you're feeling more satiated, and your body, if you're eating a little less carbs and fat, your body's going to go into your stores and burn the stores that are available. All right. So the next thing that helps your metabolism is stuff with minerals in it, and particularly iron and selenium. And so iron and selenium are both needed for functioning of your thyroid gland, that if you don't eat enough iron or selenium, your thyroid won't be able to make as much hormone. So you can eat foods that are higher in iron and selenium. Meat, seafood, legumes, nuts, and seeds all have these. Selenium is important in the conversion of T4. T4 is the main hormone that's made by your thyroid gland, and it's kicked out into your system, and then thyroid peroxidase converts T4 to T3, and T3 is more active than T4, and your body really helps to regulate the amount of T3 that is running around in your system because it is so it's so intense. And so your body wants to have an enzymatic control of how much it makes. And there are cofactors to thyroid peroxidase that helps you make that T3. And if you don't have enough, you might not make enough T3. So selenium is really important for that. So if you eat foods that have a bunch of selenium in them, you're going to get enough selenium, and then you'll that's energizing. That will help you turn your T4 into T3. So then there's chili peppers. So capsaicin is a chemical that's in chili peppers. That can boost your metabolism. It increases the rate that your body burns calories. There are studies, a lot of research studies on capsaicin. And you can take supplements, and you can actually eat the peppers themselves. And you can have very low doses, or you can have higher doses. And low doses even can be helpful. So if you just sprinkle a little bit of cayenne in your food, it's going to help with your metabolism. And it may increase the amount of fat your body burns for energy, especially if you eat a high fat meal. And the more spicy food you eat, the less this applies. So if you don't eat a lot of spicy food and you eat it once in a while, that spicy food's going to increase your metabolism. The findings are mixed, but it is something you can use. And the thing with capsaicin is helpful for a bunch of things. Capsaicin is a nitric oxide enhancer, so you make more nitric oxide. That helps to relax your blood vessels. It improves your circulation. And so if you have problems with high blood pressure, capsaicin can help to bring your blood pressure down. And if you have issues with circulation is something that can be helpful for your metabolism as well. Having good circulation helps you to exercise better, helps you to tolerate your exercise better, and it helps you to perform better. So nitric oxide enhancers are helpful for that. All right, Then we talked about coffee, that there were a bunch of studies that people who consume at least 270 milligrams of caffeine a day, I don't know if I could do that, which is about 3 cups of coffee, will burn up an extra 100 calories a day, which is not a lot. I mean, you could probably back off your food consumption by about 100 calories, but the 3 cups of coffee seems like a lot, and I mean, I wouldn't be able to drink that. There are a lot of people who can, and I tell my patients, if you don't have any health effects from consuming caffeine, then by all means consume caffeine, because it does have health benefits if it doesn't make you jittery and not feel bad. And so if caffeine gives you heartburn and indigestion and irritable bowel, and if you don't consume caffeine, you feel better, caffeine is not good for you. Caffeine is only good for you if it's good for you. If it's not good for you, it's not good for you. So I tell people, because caffeine, if it's affecting your sleep, if you have insomnia and you're consuming caffeine, that doesn't make sense. Because, and people tell me, but I only consume caffeine in the morning, and they have insomnia. I'm like, does it make sense to put something in your body that sabotages sleep when you're not sleeping well? At least try it. Try a couple of days of no caffeine and see if you sleep better. And if you don't, if your sleep is unchanged, then maybe you have a point. But and especially where there are, you know, there are benefits, health benefits to the caffeine. But it doesn't make sense to me to put a stimulant in your body when you're not sleeping well. So anyway, so be careful of that. And then there's tea. Tea also has caffeine in it, but tea also has catechins that work with work along with caffeine to boost the metabolic rate. There's studies on oolong and matcha. So oolong is partially fermented tea. You take green tea. Green tea is when you pick the tea leaves just after they have opened, and you lightly steam them, and now they're green. And then you ferment them a specific way for a short amount of time, and you get oolong tea. If you ferment them longer, then you get your various varieties of black tea. And the varieties of black tea depend on how they're fermented, where they're grown, basically on how they're fermented and where they're grown. And so you're going to get different flavor profiles based on where they're grown, how they're grown, and how they're fermented. So oolong is fermented a shorter amount of time than a full-on black tea. So it has properties of both black and green tea. And then matcha tea. So matcha tea is basically, you take the green tea, you pick the leaves right when they're ready and available, and then you pulverize them into a powder. So the thing with matcha is you get a lot more benefits from matcha than you get from steeping tea, because you're drinking the powder, you're actually consuming the leaves, so you get a lot more antioxidants. Thing to be careful of is, depending on how much matcha you consume, it can have more caffeine in it, because you're not just dipping the bag into water and letting the constituents come off, you're actually consuming the whole leaf. But oolong and matcha have been studied to increase fat oxidation. So for tea, it's not just about the caffeine. It's about the catechins as well. So catechins are a type of polyphenol. And these polyphenols are found more in tea than in coffee. And so you might be able to get away with less caffeine and from consuming the tea, because you have the additive effect of the catechins. And so if you're a person who doesn't do well with caffeine, you doesn't do well with a lot of caffeine, having the catechins on board might help you, so that you are able to consume less caffeine and still get your nice effect. Again, you got to watch out for putting sugar or sweeteners or milk or cream in your tea, because they will tend to negate these effects. There's some idea that if you put milk into tea, that you don't that it blocks the absorption of some of the bioflavonoids, so all of these things are going to work better if you don't sweeten the tea. If you put a non-caloric natural sweetener in, that's probably okay too. If you put in something like stevia or monk fruit into your tea, that's probably okay too. Or if you sweeten it, just put as little as you can get away with. I find that especially if I'm having cold tea, if I put lemon into it, I don't need as much sweetener, because the lemon brightens up the flavor. It takes off some of the bitter edge if you're not crazy about that. And then you can put less sweetener in. All right. And then beans and legumes will help to increase your metabolism. They're high in protein compared to other plant foods. And they have a higher TEF, thermic effect of food. And they have a lot of fiber. And they have resistant starch in them. And they have soluble fiber. And those starches go through your digestive system and feed the good bacteria that live in your large intestine. And they also, the friendly bacteria, produce short-chain fatty acids, which help, and short-chain fatty acids help your body use your stored fat. So if you, and I know that if you're eating a low-carb diet, not everybody wants to eat beans and legumes because they're higher in carbohydrate, but they are, a lot of their carbohydrate is resistant starch and these prebiotic fibers. So if you tolerate them and you don't get a lot of gas and bloating from eating, not everybody can eat beans because they can't digest them. You can try, if you eat beans over time, sometimes you can develop a tolerance to them because you develop probiotics that help you digest the starches that are in the beans. If you take enzymes that have galactosidases in it, so if you get the brand, the common brand that everybody knows about, or just any enzyme that has alpha-galactosidase in it, it can help you to digest beans and legumes. So you could take those, and then you might benefit from the starch. Because what you want is you want that that prebiotic, that resistant starch. Resistant starch goes through your system slowly, so it increases your sense of fullness, so you might be likely to eat less. And then it gets into your colon, and it helps you to produce more more probiotic. And so you produce that probiotic, and then you make the short-chain fatty acids, and then you utilize your body fat better. Then there's ginger. Ginger is another lovely spice. And if you put 2 grams of ginger powder in hot water and drink it with a meal, you can burn 43 more calories than drinking the plain hot water. So having, and I would say that probably having ginger in your food, flavoring your food with ginger, is going to help with your metabolism as well. But if you do the hot ginger powder with water, it can decrease your levels of hunger and increase your sense of fullness. There's another spice called grains of paradise. I've never heard of that. That can also have similar effects. And so there was actually a study on men, and they found that they burned 43 more calories per meal than if they were given a placebo. So some people didn't respond either. So not everybody who got this got either the ginger or the grains of paradise responded. So it depends on your genetics if you respond to these things. All right, and then there's cacao. Cacao and cocoa are tasty treats. They may boost your metabolism. There are mice studies that show that cacao and cocoa extracts may promote the expression of genes that stimulate fat burning. When they studied mice that ate high-fat diets and high-calorie diets, there was a good effect on this. And so the thinking is it may prevent the action of enzymes that break down fat and carbs during digestion. So it prevents you from consuming some of the calories they provide. So when you do the studies on actual humans are rare, make sure you're doing raw organic cocoa that has not been alkalized. And again, the less sugar, the better. That if you're going to eat squares of dark chocolate, make sure that it's at least 70%. And if you use unsweetened cocoa in anything, you're going to get more benefit from it. So if you use cocoa nibs, or if you use cocoa powder that has not been sweetened, then you're going to get more benefit from that. Then there's apple cider vinegar. All my patients come in, I do my apple cider vinegar. Is that good for me? Apple cider vinegar can be helpful. There's some animal studies that show that it does increase the amount of fat that's burned. It's often claimed to boost metabolism. It might help you lose weight. It slows stomach emptying and enhances your feelings of fullness. So it's another satiety builder. you want to take about 1 to 2 tablespoons a day. It's a good idea if you're going to take apple cider vinegar with your meal, either dilute it in water, or it's a really good idea to drink plain water right after you swallow the apple cider vinegar and swish your mouth with the plain water, because the acids in it can eat at your tooth enamel. In fact, anytime you're eating anything acidic, like if you're eating a lemon or an orange or something like that, it's a good idea to, when you're done with it, have some water, and it doesn't have to be a lot, but just enough water so that you can swish it in your mouth and get rid of some of the acids, so that acids are not hanging around in your mouth afterwards. Then there's MCT oil. That's medium chain triglyceride oil. Medium chain triglyceride oil is a unique type of fat, has some metabolic benefits. MCT oil is primarily, the place where it's often extracted from is coconut. And there's some thought that when you increase MCT oil consumption, it can increase your metabolic rate. They go directly to the liver to be used for energy, and they're less likely to be stored. And so you can take it as a supplement. It can be added to foods like soups or smoothies. People like to put it in their coffee. You can put it in anything. I take spoonfuls of it. You can buy it flavored, or you can buy it unflavored and flavor it yourself. Because mine, it just tastes like oil. And then if you put a little bit of flavoring in it, it makes it taste like a nice, yummy, fatty treat. Water. So here is this lovely substance. Water is thermogenic. So when you drink enough water, it helps all of your organs of detoxification and metabolism require water. So if you are dehydrated, your liver and your kidneys and your lymphatics, nothing will work as efficiently. And that when you drink enough water, there are studies that show that water can boost your metabolism by as much as 24% to 30%. And it's and that's explained. And if you drink cold water, the effect is additive, because your body needs to heat the water to body temperature. So if you drink cold water, your body will warm it up, and it'll use energy and circulation to do that. And it only lasts for about 40 to 90 minutes after drinking the water. So the strength can vary from person to person, but that also means you should be drinking the water throughout the day. Then there's seaweed. Seaweed has a lot of iodine in it, and iodine is needed for, it's an essential mineral that you need to make thyroid hormone. And if you don't have enough iodine in your diet, you might not have enough thyroid hormone. So you can eat seaweed. Seaweed overall has more iodine in it than actual fish. So not everybody likes to eat seaweed, but there are some ways that you might be able to eat it. You can get these snacks that are flavored. They might be flavored with just oil and salt. Sometimes they're flavored with things like wasabi or mustard or onion or sesame oil. And you can eat them as snacks. And then you can also get seaweed seasoning. So you can get seasoning, for example, that's basically Italian seasoning that has kelp added to it. You can get a mixed seaweed blend that you can sprinkle on savory foods or into any foods. And the other thing you can do is you can take seaweed and you can put it in your soup or rice or other grains while they're cooking. And then you don't have to eat the seaweed. You can pull it out if you want to. And the minerals will be imparted into the broth, into the water that you're consuming. So those are some foods that can increase your metabolism. And then I separated this by foods that can increase your fat burning. And so foods that can increase your fat burning are going to be similar to foods that increase your metabolism. So let's see what we say here. So then there's fatty fish. So fatty fish is going to be like mackerel, sardines, herrings, salmon. They have omega-3 fatty acids, and they reduce inflammation and decrease heart disease and can help you lose body fat. There was a 6-week controlled trial of 44 adults who took fish oil supplements, and they noticed a drop in cortisol, and they lost 1.5 pounds. So that drop in cortisol could have helped them with their fat loss, because cortisol puts sugar into your blood, which if you don't use it up, will get stored as fat. So if your cortisol, the less cortisol you have, especially if you have excess cortisol and you help to drop that, you're going to be more likely to burn more fat. And because you're going to have less sugar in your blood, and you're going to be less likely to store fat. And so I tell people that if you're after fat loss, one of the most important things to do is reduce your stress. It's not just about getting that exercise and eating less food, which are helpful, but doing actual stress-reducing activities, like just spending time being quiet. If you have a lot of things to do, just take time in between the different things that you do. So if you rest, you're reducing cortisol. If you meditate, if you do yoga, if you do yin yoga, if you do restorative yoga, if you do tai chi, if you do qigong, all of those things can reduce your cortisol. And when you reduce your cortisol, reduce the sugar that's in your blood, and you improve your fat storage. You can lower your fat storage. So if you want to use fish to help with this, then the idea is just two. It's not a lot. It's 2 servings of 3 ounces of fatty fish per week. But it's got to be one of these guys. It's got to be salmon or herring or sardines or mackerel. The white fish is not going to have. So if you have a thing for, like, cod does have a lot of essential fatty acids in it. There are still going to be essential fatty acids in things like haddock and tilapia, but probably not as much as your mackerel, your herring, your salmon, and your cod. So we talked about MCT oil already as something that it can increase your increase your metabolism. It can also increase fat loss, and it can be extracted. I said it can be extracted from coconut oil. It's also extracted from palm oil. And because of the shorter length, as we said, it can go straight to your liver, where they can be used immediately for energy. They're easily converted to ketones and are an alternative fuel source other than carbohydrates. And there are several studies where it's shown to increase your metabolic rate. There was a study in 8 healthy men who found that if they added 1 or 2 tablespoons of MCT to their usual diets, they increased their metabolic rate 5% over 24 hours. And they also can reduce hunger, promote better retention of muscle mass during weight loss. So if you replace some of the fat in your diet with a couple tablespoons of MCT oil, it can help with your fat burning. Start slow, because if you're not used to MCT oil, it can give you some digestive upset. I'm at a point where I do it all the time. It doesn't give me digestive upset. So you might want to start with a teaspoon a day, see how it affects you. Go a few days having that teaspoon, and then gradually increase your dose. Back to coffee. Coffee can help you burn fat. We talked about that. When you take caffeine before exercise, you can burn nearly twice as much fat and able to exercise 17% longer. So that's one of the things that we're talking about, that coffee, it lowers your RPE, lowers your ratings of perceived exertion. So that means that at the same exertion level, you feel better when you have caffeine on board. So you're going to be able to burn more fat, and you're also going to be able to exercise a longer amount of time if you have the caffeine on board. So they had people doing 100 milligrams of caffeine every 2 hours for 12 hours, and lean adults would burn 150 extra calories, and formerly obese adults 79 extra calories. So that's interesting. People who tend to be lean probably have higher metabolism than people who tend to be heavier. I guess that makes sense. So these benefits that you get from these metabolism inducers, people who have a slower metabolism to start with don't benefit as much. So, but if you give somebody who's already got a high metabolism a metabolism inducer, it's going to keep them going even longer. So no more than 400 milligrams a day, of course, and that's like 4 or 5 cups of coffee, depending on the size of your cup of coffee. And again, you want to be careful, because for me, 150 milligrams of coffee might be too much. So if that's you, it's not a good idea to put caffeine on board in order to lose fat. If it makes you jittery, anxious, gives you insomnia, it's not a good idea. So eggs. Eggs are have a lot of nutrition in them. They used to talk about avoiding them because of cholesterol. Whole eggs are now known to reduce cardiovascular issues and help to add with weight loss. Because the thing is, when you eat cholesterol, you don't make as much. So yes, there's cholesterol in eggs, but it doesn't, unless you're a hyperabsorber, it's not going to increase your cholesterol that much. What increases your cholesterol is inflammation and too much starch and sugar. That's mostly what increases your cholesterol. If you're eating a lower carbohydrate diet and you have eggs as part of your lower carbohydrate diet, you're probably going to have a good cholesterol profile. So they had an 8-week study in 21 men who ate 1,000 calories less than usual. They ate 3 eggs for breakfast. They had a 16% greater reduction in body fat compared to the group who ate a bagel with breakfast. Well, that makes sense because it's got protein and fat in it instead of all these carbohydrates. If you have a bagel is going to have a huge amount of white starch and sugar in it, and it's going to increase your it's going to increase your blood sugar. It doesn't make sense, and increase your insulin. So of course that makes a lot of sense comparing eggs to bagels. All right. So eggs have a lot of high quality protein. We talked about how protein increases your metabolic rate, and they're filling because they increase your calorie burning. And if you have a bunch of eggs a few times a week, it can help you burn fat and feel satisfied. Getting back to green tea also has been known to help to reduce heart disease risk, and the polyphenols in it are incredible antioxidants, and they're really good for helping to prevent cancer. And I do give green tea extract to my patients who have cancer to help with. I mean, it's not guaranteed, of course, but it's something that can be helpful. And there was a study in 12 healthy men. They found that during bicycling, they increased their fat burning by 17% when they took green tea extract. Really? Compared to those who took a placebo. And there are some negative studies too, meaning that they didn't find that effect. So probably what happens there is there are differences from person to person. So it's something you can try. And again, if caffeine is bad for you, it's bad for you. Don't consume caffeine, and don't increase your caffeine if caffeine makes you jittery and not able to sleep and you wake up with a foggy head and stuff like that. Then there's whey protein. It is it's a remarkable protein. It's extracted from dairy. It's one of the main proteins in dairy, along with casein. It's helpful for suppressing appetite. It stimulates fullness hormones like PYY and GLP-1. And there was a study where they had men drink protein drinks on 4 separate days, and they had reduced hunger levels. Whey appears to boost fat burning and promote weight loss in lean people. And found to increase metabolic rate. I think that of all the protein shakes, I think whey protein is among the best tasting. The only problem is a lot of people are dairy intolerant. If you're intolerant to dairy protein, this is not going to work for you. And I found that when I was drinking whey protein shakes, my body was like, no. I got a lot of indigestion and cramps and stuff, and I was not able to do it. So obviously, if it gives you any kind of bad effect, if it gives you indigestion, gas, bloating, anything bad like that, you don't want to consume whey protein and find something else. There are other protein shakes that you can take, like protein powders that you can use, and among them are pea protein, mixed vegetarian proteins, and then there are other animal protein shakes you can get. You can get egg protein, and you can get bone broth protein, and you can get collagen protein. I'm using bone broth protein. It seems to agree with me very well, and seems to agree with me better than I used to use I used to use pea protein, hydrolyzed pea protein. And that was good, but I feel, and I'll, you know, I don't mind having that now and again, but I find that the bone broth protein is more satisfying, and I'm finding that I think it does good things for my digestion because it helps me to rebuild my digestive tract, and it's very absorbable. But if you are not dairy intolerant, you're not whey intolerant, and you want an easy protein shake, whey protein has a lot of good studies on it, and the amino acids in whey protein go right up into your system. They're very easily absorbable. They're immune globulins in whey protein. If you get good whey protein from grass-fed cows, I think it's a good thing to use as long as you tolerate it and digest it well. Ron uses whey protein. I only don't because I don't tolerate it, but I tolerate the bone broth protein, which is also is going to have some similar effects. Back to apple cider vinegar can help with fat loss. It's found to increase fat burning in a few animal studies. There isn't a lot of research on vinegar's fat loss in humans, but there was one encouraging study where people added 2 tablespoons of vinegar to the usual diet and lost 3.7 pounds and had a 0.9% reduction in body fat, which is, again, you want to add that to the other things that you're doing, like your exercise and your intelligent calorie restriction, where you're eating a balanced diet but you're eating less calories and you're doing your stress reduction. So if you throw a little apple cider vinegar in, it might help. Again, when you consume apple cider vinegar, make sure it's diluted, and a really good idea to swish plain water in your mouth and swallow after consuming apple cider vinegar, because of so it doesn't burn your enamel. Again, back to chili peppers, that can help you burn fat. The capsaicin can help you with a healthy weight, can help you burn more calories and body fat. And there was a study where calorie intake was restricted by 25%. Capsaicin helps you keep the metabolism up that you lose when you reduce your calories, and also helps to reduce appetite. Then oolong tea, which is one I specifically talked about. It's very heavy. You don't hear about it as, it's very healthy. It receives less press than green tea, but has a lot of the same health benefits. It does have caffeine and catechins in it, like the green tea does. And there are some studies that found that the catechins plus the caffeine in tea increased calorie burning by like a good 102 calories per day, which is not nothing. And if you drink oolong tea, there are studies that show that it increases your metabolic rate and promote your weight loss. And there was a study that showed that increased your weight loss twice as much as green tea. So I tell people, try oolong tea. I mean, everybody thinks about green tea, but try oolong, because oolong's been studied. So oolong has a flavor profile that's somewhere between green tea and black tea. If you've had tea from the Chinese restaurant, often that's oolong tea. It's not as it's not as bold tasting as black tea, and it's probably not as bitter as green tea. It's somewhere in between, and you can sweeten it a little bit, put a little bit of honey in it, not too much if you want to take off the bitter edge, or you can use non-caloric sweeteners like stevia and monk fruit to help. Then there's full-fat Greek yogurt. Full-fat Greek yogurt, again, this is not something you're going to be eating if you have a dairy intolerance, especially if you're intolerant to dairy protein. And so I can't really do it. But if you don't have that problem, full-fat Greek yogurt can be helpful. And it's better if it's from grass-fed cows, because then you're going to have less foreign hormones, or added hormones to the dairy protein. High protein dairy products can boost fat loss, protect muscle during weight loss, help you feel full and satisfied. The probiotics are going to be helpful, can help reduce irritable bowel syndrome. They'll only reduce irritable bowel syndrome if the dairy protein doesn't give you, enhance your irritable bowel syndrome. But if you are tolerant to the dairy, it's going to help your constipation and bloating, the probiotics. Because if you're doing full fat, then you're going to get conjugated linoleic acid, especially if it's from grass-fed cows. Grass-fed cows' milk has more conjugated linoleic acid in it, which is something that promotes weight loss. And it tends to work better if you consume the conjugated linoleic acid in food as opposed to taking supplements. So conjugated linoleic acid is going to be higher in grass-fed, in dairy from grass-fed cows, and also in the meat of grass-fed cattle. So if you have some red meat from grass-fed cattle, you can get more conjugated linoleic acid. If you have regular Greek yogurt, you have Greek yogurt regularly, you can get the plain and the full fat, and add your own fruit to it, add your own nuts and seeds to it so that you're not dealing with too much sugar, and see if you can develop a taste for having it unsweetened. If you can develop that taste, it's nice and creamy, it's got a bright sour flavor, and if you throw your own fruit into it, it'll sweeten it up a little bit. And the other thing you can throw in, if you want it to taste sweeter, that's not going to be caloric and is going to taste good, is cinnamon. Anytime you use cinnamon in something, cinnamon helps with fat loss. It helps to regulate blood sugar. It tastes sweet, and it makes it so that you need less actual sweetener. Then there's olive oil. Olive oil is pretty darn healthy. It's been shown to lower triglycerides. It helps to increase your HDL. Stimulates GLP-1. So you know those drugs that are out, like semaglutide, which is sold as Ozempic and Rybelsus, that everybody's all excited about taking. Those are GLP-1 enhancers. That's how they work. Well, olive oil also helps to release GLP-1. So you get a lot of side effects when you take those drugs. When you take olive oil, you don't get nearly the side effects, unless you have some kind of a sensitivity to it. Olive oil has been shown to possibly increase metabolic rate. And there was a study of 12 postmenopausal women who showed that when they ate extra virgin olive oil as part of a meal, it increased in the amount of calories burned. You can put it on your salad. You can add it to cooked food. So there's a bunch of foods that can help to increase fat burning. Again, remember, if you want to increase fat burning and help yourself lose weight, number one, stress reduction. And stress reduction is doing less stuff and getting more rest and doing restorative activities. The restorative activity that you want to do is one that includes deep breathing, because deep breathing directly lowers cortisol. That's the goal of deep breathing. Deep breathing is going to make you feel better, you know, emotionally and spiritually. But the big part of it is when you lower cortisol, you're dumping less sugar into your blood, which is then not going to get stored as fat. Stress reduction is the number one thing to help with fat loss, followed by hormonal balance, which is part of lowering your cortisol. So you want to have a good proportion of androgens, estrogens, and reduce your cortisol. And calorie restriction. You do have to restrict your calories in order to lose fat. But all of these other things can help if you do all of those things, and you consume some apple cider vinegar, and you consume some oolong tea, and you add MCT oil, and you increase your protein and reduce your carbohydrates, and eat more fiber. All of these things are going to help. So, all right. So let's talk about soluble fiber. And then I think we'll wrap it up. So soluble fiber is really good for you. It can help with fat loss as well. So fiber in general helps you with fat loss, but soluble fiber helps more. So soluble fiber, we were talking about when you eat legumes, it increases your friendly gut bacteria. Do you know you have 100 trillion bacteria living in your gut, mostly in your large intestine?
No.
Yeah. And there are different species of bacteria that play important roles in various aspects of health, including weight management, blood sugar control, immunity, brain function. Bacteria need to eat well to stay healthy. So fiber, mostly soluble fiber, helps with that. It passes through your digestive system mostly unchanged. It reaches your friendly gut bacteria that digest it and turn it into usable energy. The kind of fiber that's in it is a prebiotic. Prebiotic simply means that it goes into your digestive system and your probiotic bacteria will eat the soluble fiber, so it can be really helpful. Good gut bacteria help with chronic inflammation because they produce short chain fatty acids, which leads to less gut inflammation, improvements in related inflammatory disorders. So if you have an autoimmune condition, or you have an irritable or inflammatory bowel disease, or if you even have just general muscular inflammation, if you have better gut flora, you're going to have less problems with those. So chronic low-level inflammation plays a role in every chronic Western disease: heart disease, Alzheimer's, metabolic syndrome, diabetes. So when you eat soluble fiber, it can help reduce your appetite. It helps you eat less. When you count calories, it can help a lot of people. But if you choose the right foods, you may not need to count calories. Again, increasing your soluble fiber, increasing your protein, increasing your medium-chain triglycerides, eating more fish, those can all be helpful. The more soluble fiber, the more viscous it is. It'll help to reduce your appetite in food intake. It's how thick and sticky it is. And so pectins, beta-glucans, psyllium, glucomannan, guar gum, all thickened in water, which forms a gel that kind of sits in your gut and causes slower gastric emptying, slower emptying of your stomach. So it increases your digestion and absorption times, and you have a prolonged feeling of fullness, so you might be likely to eat less, and then you get the benefit of those prebiotics. You could take fiber supplements, but it's really better to eat the fiber from food. But you can take glucomannan, which is extracted from the konjac root, and it's a viscous fiber. It has been shown to have a modest increase in fat loss, so it can be helpful. It's really a good idea to focus on whole plant foods like beans and legumes, flaxseed, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, oats. They all have a lot of soluble fiber in them. So that's what you get today, soluble fiber. And next week, I promise, we'll start talking about cardiovascular disease. But I thought you might want to get a jump on eating a healthy diet because it is springtime, so people are interested in that. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org or iTunes and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.